This conference is being recorded.
Yay.
Got it.
Hello,
and I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last name.
Terman.
Okay. Was there someone else?
Yeah, I just got on. My name is Valerie Amore.
Okay, Valerie. Okay, Mike.
Okay, great. Well, last week we had kind of a special conference call. We did a kind of a unplugged version of what the Brownfields grant application was going to look for and what they were looking for. And I don't know if there's any follow-up on that we want to make, but otherwise, first let's see if anyone wants to say anything in general about the grant application that's coming up, and then we're going to move on to a topic today is going to be all about students. About recruiting them, getting the right target groups, supporting them, and placing them. Did anyone have anything they wanted to contribute regarding the RFA that's coming up that's due December 1st for EPA? Anyone have any questions about that?
I just have a quick question. I missed your call last week, but I didn't want to. I did. You did record it, correct?
Right.
And okay.
You can go to... Actually, whenever we get a new call, it doesn't appear. Someone just joined.
Hi, this is Mara Lewis joining from New Orleans.
Okay. It won't appear when you dial in. It's just the last call that you will hear. But if you go to the toolbox, it will be posted up on the toolbox. In fact, I think we just started to post some. So we'll post that MP3 up on the Brownfields toolbox. Hello, do you want to give them the website of the toolbox just to repeat?
It's www.brownfields-toolbox.org.
And could you tell them how they could get access to the PLC section?
Along the top, there's tabs along the top, and there's a tab up there called PLC Corner. And if you look in the first box, you'll see notes from these sessions that are Word documents and also recordings. So if you just click on one of those, you just go right into it. And I just posted the notes from last week's session this morning, so those are up there. I haven't looked, so I don't know if the recording is up there yet, but if it isn't, it will be soon.
Okay, thank you.
That toolbox is a place we're trying to put all the information we can that has to do with Brownfield job training. And so if you go there, you could explore it, and there'll be an option you can contribute to it. And we're trying to get everything in one place so that announcements and are all there, and then have a historical record of what's been talked about, and URLs and sites that you can go to get some good information and that type of thing. I guess the thing that's taken away from the job training grant proposal that everyone is looking at that's due December 1st is, in general, I would say if you're going to be writing an application, one thing I would keep in mind is look at it as a start. You may hit a home run the first time, but don't feel bad if you don't. I think many of the grantees who are on the line have submitted several times and sometimes have gotten rejected or missed by a few points. The way they decide who gets grants, there's about 10 grants that are given, and they use a scoring system. And some of the people are fairly knowledgeable and some aren't as knowledgeable about job training. And so they're looking at your rhetoric and your writing and that you've very clearly addressed every issue. And the thing we keep telling people is assume that the people you're writing to know nothing about these job training programs, know nothing about your community, know nothing about the good work you've done in the past, and that every point stands by itself, and let every piece answer every question, every piece, because they're going to try to make it as objective as they can, so they're going to put points on everything, just like grading a test in high school. They're going to look for the answers to every question that they asked, and whenever you don't answer a question, you're going to have points off. And what they're going to do is they're going to sum up all these points, and then it gives them a fairly objective ranking of all of the grants that are submitted. Now,
Mike, if I could just interrupt for a minute, please. I just wanted to say that I just checked on the toolbox, and the recording is not up there yet, but for last week's session, we have an outline that we have sent out ahead of time, and that's posted up on the toolbox and notes. So if you want to go back and check on it, it's under the PLC corner in the funding section. There's two documents in.
The MP3 should be there pretty soon because we've sent them to the webmaster and I'll be posting them shortly. So what I would take away from the job training proposal, you need to answer every question very precisely and make sure that you let every answer come by itself.
I'm hearing an echo.
Yeah, I am too.
We seem to be having some technical problems, don't we? Let's see if it clears up in a little bit here. If it doesn't, what we may want to do is everyone come up and then rejoin the conversation. See how irritating this is.
No, Mike, the echo is you.
Is it me?
Yeah.
Okay, let me hang up and then come back in. And Glo, maybe you could tell him a little bit about Brownfield 09 and a little bit about the toolbox, and I'll back in.
Whoever gave the, I'm trying to go into the website, and I'm having a problem here. I don't know if I missed something.
You mean you're not getting to it at all?
I'm not getting to it at all.
It's www.brownfields.
Brownfield or Fields?
Fields with an S. /toolbox.org. Is it working?
I'm trying it now.
Okay. Is that better?
I'm not getting it here.
I don't know yet, Mike.
Okay. Okay. Today we're going to talk about student recruitment.
I feel like that.
I'm still hearing an echo too.
So am I.
Like to try it on a totally different line. Let me try one more time. I'll be right back.
I'm still trying to get this. I don't know why.
Are you putting in the hyphen between Fields and Toolbox?
I put the hyphen right after the S.
Okay, yeah. It should be working. I mean, I've got it pulled up here.
Something I'm not doing right. Is there any way that you could email it to me?
Huh, yeah. What's your email address?
KAMASCHIR. LYN@yahoo.com.
KAMASCHIRLYN.
SCHIRLY.
Okay, all right.
I'm on the list.
Mike, are you back yet?
Maybe it's not him.
No, but when he's not on the line, I don't hear it anymore.
I hear it now.
Do you?
I hear something.
There is still some background noise.
It's not the echo, though.
Is that the echo still there? Is the echo happening on everyone?
I think so, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
It's everyone's having that problem. Okay. Well, it must be with the site. Let's see how bad it is. It's really bad. Is it Glo and you talk and you, everyone's hearing an echo also?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well, we could try to plod through it with this irritation or reschedule. one of the, when we talk about student recruitment, let's see how bad this is, and then we'll go from there. We're talking about marketing to get your students. We're talking about screening your students. And then we're talking about supporting your students. And then we're talking about placing your students. And that whole process, 5 or 6-step process, is going to determine how successful your program is. If you recruit the wrong target group, you're going to have problems placing those individuals at the end of the pipe after they're trained. So what you're going to have to do is almost work backwards. You're going to have to decide what kind of jobs you're going to be placing students in, and then work backwards to see what kind of students you need to be recruiting for that group. If you don't do that, what could happen is you would end up training a group of students that when they get to the end, they don't have the qualifications, or they don't have the background, or they may have some issues that the employers that you have lined up or your labor market assessment has determined will hire them, will not. So it's almost like working backwards. So what you really need to do is, when you're developing your project, you take your advisory committee and your employer you're planning on using, and those who will be hiring your students, and you need to ask them, are there any impediments or restrictions that will not allow them to be employed in these jobs? For example, there are programs that bring ex-offenders into the program, but there are jobs that ex-offenders cannot take. So here's a classic example. You need to have jobs at the end of the pike that if you're going to be working with ex-offenders, that ex-offenders could take these jobs. Might be the same issue with women. Now, we have women's programs. In Oregon, we have a women's program. There are, unfortunately, some jobs that are very physical that a woman may or may not qualify to take, whether it's weight restrictions that are limiting their ability to enter that workforce or some other impediment. So the issue is looking at what kind of program you're going to develop and working backwards. We've had programs that were for veterans with disabilities, and these were veterans in wheelchairs and had disabilities. While they could not take physical jobs, they were very well qualified to do phase one assessments, where they could go to City Hall, they could go to the county courthouse, and look up records of the history of a property to see what was on that property in the past, and if there's any problems that could have created hazardous materials. So the concept I'm trying to get across here is look backwards first and then go forward. If you look backwards and you find, for example, you want to do an ex-offender program, you've identified employers that are open to hiring ex-offenders, then you start working backwards. Now we start saying what requirements as far as education do we need? Do they have to have a high school diploma or a GED? If they absolutely have to have a GED, then your target marketing group for your participants don't have GEDs or high school diplomas, you're going to have something in your program to provide them with the GED or the high school diploma. So again, we're looking from the back and going forward. So that first step is establishing your target, looking backwards and finding out how you're going to place and who you're going to be placing. Then as you work backwards through your program to see what kind of courses they're going to take, you can decide what skill and knowledge requirements you're going to have for those entering the program. If you recruit people who can't handle it or are going to be in over their head, they're just going to quit because it's going to be too hard. If they don't have the math skills or the English skills, they could get frustrated, and it's unfair to them. They'll get halfway through the program and say, "This is, I just can't do this." So if you're going to do that, you're going to have provision for remedial training, life skills training.
Mike?
Yes.
Mike, this is really hard to understand. I don't know how everybody else...
Yeah, maybe what we should do is, if it's all right with the group, reschedule this till next Wednesday. Would that be okay?
That's fine.
Yes.
Let's do that. This can be very frustrating. It must be something to do with the site today, because it sounds like everybody's a problem. So why don't we, I'll send some notes out, and then we'll Oh, it is gone.
Yeah, they're logged in or logged out, and it disappeared.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're right. It is gone. It's completely gone.
Okay.
It is gone.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, who's is everyone still? Anyone still on?
Yeah,
I'm still
on.
Mike is
still. I'm still here.
Okay. Well, that maybe it was just one one phone line that was a problem.
Somebody was using the speaker phone.
Maybe that could very well be. That's it. And I guess the moral of the story there is we just have to warn everyone not to use speakerphones.
Yeah.
I'm on speakerphone. This is Paula. Are you getting any?
No.
Not a problem with you.
Okay. This is Glow. I'm on speakerphone, too.
Oh, okay.
Is Camara still on?
Yes, I am.
Did you get my email with the Brownfields Toolbox links?
I didn't check.
Okay. Okay. Well,
Mike, this is Will Higley. Something that as people are trying to screen for these jobs, they may want to consider. An issue has just cropped up with some with local military bases that they are denying access to any person employed by anybody who has had a felony.
Right. That's very interesting. So right there... you're saying you really have to be very careful if you're bringing in ex-offenders with felonies.
Yes.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting because under the last president, there was a huge initiative to try to provide ex-offenders with job opportunities, and of course, this kind of flies in the face of that. This is probably more of a security issue than anything else.
Yes, but it's just, you know, a matter of frustration for some people. This just hit the local news yesterday.
Wow. Very interesting. And is that a base policy, or is it some national policy that you know?
I don't know. It affects three bases in the North Florida area.
Wow.
I don't know whether it's nationwide or what. And I don't know what promulgated it. It's just something that other people may want to look at locally to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And great. Because that would really put dampers in some of the people's programs. We do have programs that are ex-offender programs, and they're looked at very kindly upon because it's a real issue. There's been a real problem. And the thing about it is, ex-offenders are often excellent students and good workers. Again, it depends on your selection process. When we get into screening, as we said, you determine your target group, and then you start to recruit to that target group. Now, the question is, do you go broad-based posters, radio announcements, newspapers? I think, Paula, you all, I'm talking... to you over the years, you've used newspapers quite effectively, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
And you use radio and our word of mouth primarily?
Not so much. Radio, not so much. Word of mouth, definitely, because we also have other programs, like we have a GED program. So we do that. In fact, tonight I'm actually going to the annual meeting of our our main local environmental justice organization. So I'll be as part of my public meeting, but also because we get, you know, we use other community organizations like this one for recruiting. But I think this point about the criminal record is important from the other side too. You need to know from your employers what their tolerance is for criminal records and for particular kinds of criminal records. There may be a in some cases one of our employers has a you know distinction between what is you know what's tolerable or what's you know and what isn't depending on the context. So I would say that type of screening works two ways.
Good point. There's felony, there are stockbrokers and financiers who have felony convictions, and there's murderers, and there's people who got caught with marijuana or whatever, and they all may have felonies, and do you put them all into one category? Very good point.
They don't like violence and they don't like stealing. That's just sort of what our experience has been.
Stealing and what else?
Violence and stealing, theft.
Do they ask you for a copy of their criminal record when you're placing them?
We're not an authorized agency to do that. So we ask our candidates to do that themselves so that nobody's surprised. The employers run it themselves. They have the capability to do that. And so it's part of the screening process to ask them to get their own records and then to be able to address any inconsistencies. Because we have a problem here in Massachusetts that a lot of stuff is not correct.
Now, when you are recruiting students on their application, you ask them if they've got felony or convictions?
Yes.
So you're up front. And if they have felony conviction, then at least you know if they're admitted to the program, you know that you're going to have to make provisions for that.
Correct.
Which is fair. That's a good way to handle it. Excuse me?
No, I was just wondering if she ever tried, because there are programs out there that deal with stealing, and there are programs that deal with violence, people who are violent. Is there anything in employers' requirements to say if these people coming out of prison have went through classes to rehabilitate themselves. Is that helpful at all?
I think that really gets down to whether or not how long ago it's been. I think it can be a factor. I don't have any direct experience with that, but it seems to me that, you know, when you're advocating for your for your person, you have to be comfortable with the fact that that's, you know, that they've demonstrated, you know, positive conflict resolution skills, so that you can advocate them to the employer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of those case by case situations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good information to know.
This is a difficult situation with the Brownfields job training programs, because when you get funding from EPA, they'll only cover the environmental
mm-hmm.
program.
Yeah.
And they're not going to cover life skills or remediation. They'll cover remediation if you include it in a course. For example, if you need to teach someone brush up their math skills in geometry or in fluid flow or some algebra, some geometry, some basic math to do the problems in the environmental class, it's covered. But if you have a class in it's not covered. So that's one issue in terms of writing your curriculum and as it relates to student services, that
mm-hmm.
you need to be able to if you're going to cover it with an EPA funding, it needs to be embedded into an EPA environmental type course.
Do you know if in recruiting the students that we are targeting, do they all have to be, can they be kids that are graduating from high school or in the process of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could define any group that you want. You can, most programs would want, many programs ask for a GED or high school diploma,
mm-hmm.
and then they do the TAB test to look at their aptitude to see if they can do the math problems. That would be in the writing. But there are some programs that allow them to get a GED as part of the program,
mm-hmm.
and those would be the longer, more comprehensive programs. Those that tend to team up, perhaps like Paula's program, where they offer several other programs that are supported by other agencies. They might run them through another program first and then bring them into the environmental program after they've done some of the other training. This is the advantage of having the Brownfields program attached to a more comprehensive training program. So if you have a program already in existence that covers math and English skills and life skills, and then students who go through that have the next step of being able to move into this environmental specialty, then they can kick into the Brownfields training and take the environmental courses.
See, in our program, we work with kids to teach them how to grow food organically and how to use alternative fertilizers to bring up the land that they're using. And so we want to take them a step farther because we found that in the urban area, a lot of the soil is lead contaminated.
Mm.
And so if we can teach that training piece on lead abatement, things of that sort, we're hoping that the kids, well, one of the things we want to be able to teach them to clean up their own environment.
That's great.
In Florida, as a matter of fact, this is in the St. Petersburg area, they had a program several years ago where the highway department, they had a trouble finding employers. When we talk about working backwards on your program, they, in their early labor market assessments, they had difficulty in finding jobs that were fitting into the Brownfields mold. And but then they came across the highway department and said, who said, we need people to work in highway beautification and alongside a road.
Mm.
And that there was a tremendous demand for people that had environmental skills but could also work on the highway projects, not pouring cement and making the highway, but doing the beautification and the horticulture, herbiculture
mm-hmm.
around them. And they worked backwards in their training program and were placing large numbers of people into the highway program, public works. There's a prime example of how you have to work backwards and fitting your curriculum. And it sounds like you're looking at the same thing of seeing where you can place your students
mm-hmm.
and then kind of working backwards to give them the skills and the courses that will get them the end of the job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you need to do. The other thing you need to do is when we start talking about services and retention of keeping the students in the program, we briefly talked about the fact that you don't want to recruit students who are going to struggle and are going to be disappointed because
mm-hmm.
they're working at a level that is just beyond them at this point in their life. And anything more discouraging and frustrating to a student is in high school, you see it all the time where the course gets ahead of them and they just get frustrated and they end up dropping out or acting out. And so we really want to be appropriate to the place where the student is. And we also have to give him incentives to keep doing the hard work that he's doing. And the nice thing about the Brownfields training is that we offer certificates in many of our programs. And these certificates are like gold because it's if you were to be out and try to get a certificate, it might cost you for lead training several hundred dollars. For everyone needs to get HAZWOP or wayside worker training, that costs about $500 to $600 to get that kind of training.
Mm-hmm.
If you do confined space, there's a couple hundred dollars. Any of the OSHA courses, if you take them, are a couple hundred dollars. So your students are getting real dollar money courses and credentials by staying in your program. So to the extent that you could demonstrate to your students that as they stay in this program and don't leave it after they get their first certificate, you can get more and more valuable by getting these additional certificates. And we've seen cases where once they get the HAZWOP or the Hazardous Wayside Worker Training, they leave because they can get a job. Now, this market, that's not necessarily true because it's a tight job market, but when there was a big demand for people to work on waste sites, if you had the 40-hour training, you could basically go out and get a job. So kids would get into the programs and take the first couple courses, and then all of a sudden they're off on their own. But to these students, you need to entice them with the additional courses and certificates that will make them even more valuable when they get out. The other thing is, once they've got all these certificates, the question is, how do you place them? And of course, if we've done our homework from the very beginning, the placement kind of takes care of itself, because hopefully you've already made your employer contacts and your employers are involved in your program, and they may even know your students as they go through the programs. In the best programs, the employers are quite involved in the training program. They might be guest speakers, they might be guest teachers, and they might even get to know the students as the program goes through. So when the closer your employers are to your program, the easier your placement is going to be. And I think, as Paula mentioned, it's almost a one-on-one where you really have to work with here's the quality of this student, and here's his background, and here are his issues, if he has issues, and can you work with him? And we all know that sometimes it's the feel. If there's a connection between the employer and the student, many things can be overlooked in terms of issues that might be an issue for someone else. They might say, well, you've got these issues, but I can work with you, and I think, you know, I'd like to help you out here, and I'll give you the job. So there's this intimate relationship between the employer and your program is just very, very crucial in that placement process.
Now, I know in the application the last time I worked on one, they were saying that you had to have a list of support letters as well as a list of employers that would hire the people once they came out of or went through your training.
Right. And that's how they feel it's so important to have a relationship with employers that they included that in there. Because EPA recognizes that the success of your program is really, when it comes down to it, the success of your program is when your graduates are finished with their training that they can get jobs. And that's, everything else becomes kind of secondary. If your students are getting good jobs, and when they come out of your program, it's a success. And if they're staying in your program, it's a success. So to the extent that you can't keep them interested in the program, or you lose them as you go along, or they graduate and then all of a sudden you start thinking, okay, I've got to start recruiting, I've got to start placing and start looking in Craigslist and things for jobs, it's not going to work. It really, that placement is almost a slam dunk. That, you know, that ideally, I think some of the best programs have employers who know that they've got graduates with good skills, and they'll hire. We've heard programs that say, we've got people who hire almost everyone we graduate because they know the quality of the training, they know that the skill set that these students are going to have, and they've had good experiences with prior graduates, so that they're going to hire it. And so there's that direct connection between the employers and the program. That's kind of hard for a new program. If you're just starting up, that's a much more difficult. For a more established program, it's a little easier people know your graduates, and not only that, is many times the graduates become hiring agents, or they'll be providing recommendations new students, and they might say, well, do you know this fellow? And say, I know the program, and I know these guys, and they'll do a good job for you. So they become your marketers in the company that's recruiting from your program. If you're a new program, it's a little more problematic, and you really probably have to try to start asking around who is looking for people with certain skill sets, and mm-hmm. hopefully you're going to find someone. I remember in East Palo Alto, they were trying to develop a program, and they were having a difficult time until they ran across a tank manufacturer who said, we need people with a skill set, confined space, hazardous wayside worker, and if you teach these things, we'll hire your graduates. So they did what we're talking about happened in Florida. They worked backwards rather than training agricultural workers to work on the side of highways. They were training people who could work in tanks, and they were hiring the students that to go in the tanks, and they adapted their curriculum to give them the credentials and the experience they needed to work for this manufacturer. And then they were going other places too, but they had a fallback employer that they could always place people in, and that's kind of the direction you want to go in. There's a whole list of things we'll put in the notes, like there's some tax incentives that people have used. If you could get involved in your wage subsidies, if you work with your Department of Labor or your Department of Commerce is even a better place. Economic Development Office, sometimes they'll develop wage subsidy programs where if you employ someone in a brownfield job program, they'll subsidize 25% of their salary. Or match an employer. So those are things you can use as placement incentives for the employer. But the thing that trumps all those is the good relationship with some key people who are going to be taking your graduates. The last thing, I think, and we will be ending this call in just a minute or so, but the last thing is in terms of keeping in tracking your students, keeping in touch with them. Now, you've given them certificates in their training program, at least HAZWOP or maybe confined space and some construction OSHA courses. What you may want to do is consider offering refresher courses that they could come back and they qualify to come back for training in a year from then. Often you need to come back to keep your certificate valid. You need refresher. So the neat thing about a refresher course is it's a hook to track your students. And in the grant applications, they all ask, how are you going to track? How are you going to track your students? How are you going to keep tracking them? Because they want to know that you just didn't push them out the door and then they were out on the street. Or they worked for 3 months and then they were laid off. So that what you want to do is certainly keep in touch with them. And you want to bring them back as mentors, and you want to bring them back as much as you can to speak to new graduating classes, to work with the students. And what you want to do is offer them refresher courses and job placement services. If they get laid off or something doesn't work out or they don't like their employer, they could come back to you and you can help them get another job. And so you really want to offer these services to your graduates, even though they're leaving. You want to keep that relationship up because they're going to be your big marketers in the future, for not only for your students but for your employers. They're going to be the ones that are going to talk a good talk about your program, or say, well, so. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that you can keep those graduates coming back to your program as alumni, you're going to be well off, and it's going to really enhance your program. And as you're writing your grants, in terms of these questions of how am I going to retain the relationship between graduates and my program, you want to think of strategies that'll keep them coming in the door, even though they don't have to. And that's what we would call the tracking part of it. Also, when you track that way, it's not like you're calling them up like a parole officer and checking on them. You're actually doing something more proactive, where they want to participate in your program. The last thing I think we want to mention when we talk about recruitment and student services and placement and tracking is you want to make sure that they're going to be employed in responsible places. If you know of contractors who are unethical or not treating their employees well, you've really got to make sure that your students don't end up working there. And I've heard cases where they've actually not recommended students to not go to work at a certain place because they were not a good employer. And if they know they don't use safe working practices, absolutely not place them in harm's way. So, and that's a responsibility you have as a trainer. But, well, I have to apologize for our echo today, but did anyone have any comments on student recruitment and placement?
This is Paula. I just have a question for what you just described, which I think has been very effective for us in terms of the refresher. But would you clarify whether or not EPA pays for that under the Brownfields grant? My understanding from the past is that they did not.
This is a really good question, and maybe one we need to pose. If it's an environmental course, and you could include it as part of your environmental program, I would see no reason why they would not fund that course. Because think of a 40-hour course, and as a requirement of that course, there would be a refresher. Now, I think we need to ask Joe that question. That's a very good question.
Yeah, I don't want to lose any points by putting that in. I don't think anybody else does either.
This is, well, with a 40-hour course, you have a requirement for an 8-hour annual refresher.
That's correct.
So you could build your course in such a way that you do the 40-hour course, and before the end of the first year, include the refresher as part of the original requirements for the course.
That's the way I would lean. I think that's an excellent approach. And I know what Paul is saying. They missed out on the ARA by a few points. And you know, we're talking about this way they grade them. You know, some
of the 90 points.
Yeah, four and a half points is 500,000 dollars. That 4 points.
Wow.
That's $100,000 a point.
Yeah, that's.
So, yeah, so I know your apprehension here, but I think that's a very good point that we need to bring up with EPA. The reality is it's an environmental course, and it's
right,
time.
Right, and I like that response. I just want to be sure that it's an allowable cost.
Right. Mm-hmm. We'll pose that to Joe, and I'll pose the answer, because that's an excellent question. It would be one that, it's interesting on a grant proposal. Because it's controversial, Joe may say, "Oh, it is allowable," but then would someone else think it's allowable? You know, we've been in meetings where EPA people among themselves have argued back and forth something like that. But technically, it's an environmental course for brownfields, and it should be allowable. But again, I wouldn't stake, you know, getting.
Well, I'm going to go back to the guidance as well and.
Yeah, and see what happens.
Check it out. Okay.
Thanks for that. That's an excellent nuance there. But that is correct. They need to be refreshed every year on that. And it's a good way to keep your students coming back. We'll post some notes during the week. And actually, if anyone has some more ideas to contribute, what they can do is just send it to everyone in the group, their comments, and any ideas or questions they might have, and we'll kind of respond in kind to those questions. Okay.
Whoever was supposed to send me the link, I didn't get it.
You didn't get it?
No. I'm looking here. I don't see it.
Well, I actually sent it twice because I noticed on the first time that I sent it, I didn't have your email address quite right. But did you get Mike's announced meeting today?
Yeah, I've got it from whoever was sending it out. I did get those.
Okay, all right.
What was the name on that again?
Tamara Sherlin, Yahoo at yahoo.com.
And I just, and I use the email address, Mike, that you have in your list.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what.
Send an email to you, Glow. Then you can be sure that you have it accurately.
Yeah. Okay. I will try again.
Okay, yeah, I just looked in my spam. It's not in there either.
Right.
You can, if you either email Glow or email me back, just respond to that email, and we'll get that email address. If you could just, if you still have the email I sent you yesterday, just respond back to me.
Oh, wait a minute. Something came up. Hanny, Glow?
Yeah, me.
Okay, I got it.
You got it. Okay. Good.
Okay,
good.
Well, we're going to do the next PLC is going to be on the November 11th, 2 weeks from now, and we're going to be talking about community involvement and working with employers again, and that is a key element in also in these grant proposals. So we'll send you some notes out, and we'll kind of keep in touch by email between now and the 11th.
Okay.
And,
will that be at 1 o'clock Central again?
Same thing, 1 o'clock Central on Wednesday. Sometimes I got an email from George and Lynn, and they really wanted to attend this one, but they couldn't because they were in training. So people sometimes have conflicts, but they come and go. So that's that can be expected. But if you can make it, just come on in. I'll send you some reminders about the next meeting.
Is it the same phone number and code?
Everything's the same. Same phone number, same code, and hopefully without the echo.
Okay.
Now that we know what it is. Okay.
All right.
Okay, well, everyone have a good couple of weeks. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.